is Argus Oog Radio.
Okay, this is Dr. John Waterman coming to you from deep inside the castle. You're listening to the Waterman Files. If you're listening to us for the first time, I want to welcome you. And if you're a leftover from Carrie's program, invite you to stay. The program and the broadcast that we've got is continuing, by the way, if you're new, to be coming to you from ArgusOakRadio.org. And if you happen to be listening to the program on a podcast, you can listen to Carrie and my program, The Waterman Files, on Friday afternoons.
Ted Pike.
Yes,
hello,
Ted.
Yes, hello.
And I'm doing good. Are we all on air here?
Okay.
I think we might be live. Hang on a second, Ted, and we'll just finish up. I'm not sure, but if we're not online, he'll surely tell us. I'm pretty sure. But anyway, the broadcast here on Argus Oak Radio is broadcast starting at for the Waterman Files is 4 p.m. Eastern on Friday afternoon. So if you're listening to the podcast, also you can contact me through my email address, which is drjohnwaterman@ArgusOakRadio, and it's ArgusOog. That's ArgusOakRadio.org. Now, ground crews, if you want to tune into the latest information from the LibertyNet this weekend, you can do that by tuning your shortwave radio to 3.950, and you might have to go all a slide up to 3.960 for updates every Friday, which is kind of sketchy, but primarily Saturdays for 30 minutes, and you can start listening for those 11 p.m. American East Coast time. Okay, well, that's about it for the opening here, and we just want to welcome everybody. You're deep inside the resistance here, and we are a censor-free zone. We are advertisement free. We are open radio, kind of like open source software. We do no advertising. We hold no allegiance. Welcome. I want to welcome my surprise guest today. It was kind of a late start. I really thank you, Ted, for coming on the show. This is Ted Pike. And, you know, I could introduce you, but I think probably I want to congratulate you. It looks like somewhere around August of 1980 is when you first started getting started in all this. And so, you know what? That rounds out a pretty good 30 years there. And this is Ted Pike. We've got on.
It certainly does. Actually, my initiation into the deeper reasons behind the World Revolutionary Movement began much earlier. My parents had been Christian conservative pioneers, literally going back to the fall of China in 1949. They were in the pastorate, and they realized, however, that there was a tremendous threat from liberalism, both political and theological liberalism, and they decided to leave the established ministry and launch out to help revive Christian conservative values in the church and in the nation. And my father was on the radio for many years here in the Pacific Northwest, and during that time they received quite a few letters and pieces of information coming to them, which caused them to think more deeply. And one of these that influenced my mother and father profoundly was the famous statement, famous article, I should say, by Winston Churchill in about 1919, in which he said that international Jewish supremacism, international Jewish finance and control were behind the World Revolutionary Movement in general, but in particular against the Romanov dynasty leading to the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. And so we became more than just anti-communists on a surface level. We began to realize that there were deeper and even even more religious and spiritual reasons than political reasons behind the convulsion that was going on in the world, overthrowing governments and society and the morals of Western civilization. And about 1980, my dad and my brother and I were influential in actually convincing President Reagan to reestablish the National Day of Prayer, which had fallen into disuse. It was founded by President Washington in 1776, but we had forgotten about it. We flew an old antique airplane all around America in a 2,500 mile circuit around America, drumming up interest at rallies and flying over cities. We had a huge aerial banner that said "Pray for America," and big loudspeaker, rock system loudspeaker going out the belly of the old antique airplane saying "Pray for America." We flew over cities all around America, and as a result of that large-scale promotion and petition signature gathering drive, President Reagan did proclaim the National Day of Prayer. He invited my father to the White House to witness the signing of the revived National Day of Prayer. Now, out of that, we made many hundreds, if not thousands, of contacts around the country, and that became what we now call the National Prayer Network. And with the beginning of large-scale efforts by the Anti-Defamation League, a Jewish supremacist group, a so-called civil liberties group, to promote hate crimes legislation, around 1989, I became very concerned about the threat of the muzzling of our free speech and the persecution of Christians, such as already was existing in Sweden. Coming to America, ADL was pushing hard for a federal hate crimes bill, and I began to launch out at that time in opposition to the hate crimes agenda, which ADL had already established in Canada. I'd also, by that time, by 1989, he had produced a 345-page book, Israel, Our Duty, Our Dilemma, as well as a 60-minute video, The Other Israel, alerting the church and the nation to this threat. So, basically, our website, the truthtellers.org, is the premier website internationally now for education against hate crimes legislation, against Zionist intrigue, against the Talmudic, Kabbalistic conspiracy in the world today. And that's pretty much where we stand today. We have a very large, our National Prayer Network literally is a network spanning the globe, tying together concerned Christians and Americans who want to do something to save freedom.
Well, Ted, that's a pretty good roundup of the background in the effort that you've been involved with, and I want to say you've done pretty good. You know, working 30 years on a project like this takes a lot of perseverance. You know, a lot of people might have some misconceptions, Ted, if you don't mind me calling you Ted. Is that okay?
Well, that's fine.
One of the things is that many people have a misconception, those that maybe not have spent any of their life or exposure to the church, they get this jaded view of a Christian. And so we get these views that, you know, what they might see on TV, where the guys are like John Hagee or talking about, you know, what we need to do and so forth. We get other kinds of impressions like, oh gosh, what do I want to be involved in Christian movements for, because the Crusades were going around the country, the European continent, killing people. But, you know, when you really look at true Christianity, you really can't box it in what you call the mainline church today. At least that's my opinion. How do you feel about that, Ted?
Well, there's the church visible and there's the church invisible. And the church visible constitutes the denominations and the visible people inhabiting the pews of churches of every denomination worldwide. But the church invisible are God's elect, who are really serving God in sincerity and simple childlike trust in Him. They've given their hearts entirely to Him. They are open to His instructions and the Holy Spirit's guidance for the day. They witness as the Lord leads. They take action. They unite faith with works, again, as the Lord gives them unction to do that. And I believe that all I am really concerned about is bearing witness and speaking the truth to those who are humble enough to hear it, who are part of the church invisible, as well as those in the world that I can lead to the light of Jesus Christ and the whole truth concerning the geopolitical realities that threaten us today.
Well, so that can lead us a lot of directions, and we've got plenty of time to talk about this. You know, where I would really like to maybe start is the fact that we have kind of a benchmark event, I think, and it might have gone on before this, and you can help me with it, but it seems like to me it was fairly visible, the thing that you're involved with so much of the time. You know, we've got hate crime bills, we have hate speech bills, we have the U.S. Department of State's view of the New Testament, and you know, all kinds of issues that seem to be supporting nefarious agendas, actually, when you look at them. Now, having grown up in the church, for a long time I thought this place over there called Israel could do no wrong. I mean, you know, I was really, of course, kind of what can I say, brainwashed into thinking that they could do anything they wanted, and because of who they were, they had the right to do that. And that's just simply not the case, Ted. Do you see a lot of that when you're talking to people that might have come from Christian background, where they really think that, you know, there's just nothing they can do is wrong because they're the chosen people? I mean, you know.
Well, that has certainly been the dominant evangelical opinion for the last century. And in fact, without that unconditional support of Israel, the state of Israel would never have either come into existence or rise to its position as the fourth largest military power in the world today. The whole world has been shaken and corrupted by giving carte blanche to unregenerate, anti-Christian Jews in the media, in government, in Congress, with military and military war-making powers next to the president, a succession of presidents. We have clear back to the Balfour Declaration in 1917, the Western nations with a basically an evangelical Christian background have been entirely responsible for assisting the emergence and the rise of this anti-Christian state in Israel today. And of course, as an evangelical Christian, I do believe that God chose the Jewish people, the Hebrews originally, to be a conduit to bring forth Jesus Christ in the world. Christ needed a people, a special people there, a special land, a special religion, so that when He came down to bring salvation to all mankind, He would have a faithful remnant of Jews there as a kind of a base of operations upon which he could preach the gospel to the whole world. And of course, the Old Testament describes ancient Israel in Ezekiel 16 as a bride, the bride of God. Christ chose the infant Israel as a castaway baby thrown into the garbage heap of antiquity. He took her, he washed her, he clothed her, he made her his beautiful bride among the nations. But Scripture tells us that she became a harlot, she committed adultery and fornication with the surrounding nations, and therefore she became a spiritual prostitute. And what I believe is that since in the Old Testament, in more than 80 specific instances, and many more indirectly, Israel is called a harlot, a lewd woman, a prostitute in the spiritual sense, I believe that if we are looking for the identity of the great harlot Israel, as described in Revelation 17 and 18 in the New Testament, We need no look no further than ancient Israel. I don't believe that the papacy is the great heart of the revelation. I believe that what God started with the Jewish people and what they rejected has continued throughout the ages. And when God describes ancient Israel as a harlot with a harlot's forehead in the Old Testament, that description of her was not negated. It was not obsoleted. When they cried out, crucify him, crucify him, his blood be upon us and on our children. Actually, it became even more emblazoned on her forehead as she went out under the leadership of the scribes and Pharisees and their Talmud, their oral tradition. They went out through the nations, dispersed in the centuries following Christ, to basically work against Christian values, against Christian dominance in society, in an attempt to discover, to apprehend their new husband in place of the one who rejected them, whom they killed, which is called the Antichrist. So, as I was saying a little earlier, what we began to see very quickly, our family, even back in the late 1950s, was that underneath communism, underneath liberalism, and all of these Antichrist movements in the world today, there's basically a spiritual component, a spiritual ambition to tear down Christian values and Christian civilization so that a new Antichrist, a Judaic New World Order, might be established in its place.
And so it sounds like to me, with a group of people whose heart might have been in the right place, seemed to have gotten hijacked, or they took the wrong fork in the road. And so now for quite some time, it looks like they've been on the wrong path. And so when do you think we could say this last century, or would it have been since the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, that it has become so aggressive? And so with that kind of thought, that kind of seems to be when I kind of picked up with this idea that, you know, the Zionist Jewish fork in the road that was the wrong path seemed to have manifested through Trotsky and the new and first president of the Communist Red China of Sverdlov, Sverdlov here today, but was the first president. They were all Jewish people that seemed to be with their heart in the wrong spot, on the wrong path, doing the wrong thing, and their efforts weren't so noble, and millions of people seemed to have been killed. And that's when I began, Ted, to see, gosh, why is this the case? And then I began to see that trend didn't change. And so where does that bring us to today, and not just here in the States, but, you know, you were talking about Canada. And if I understand it right, there's some pretty vicious things that if you do laws in Canada that if you get crossways of can cause you some.
Absolutely. Well, the fact is that for about at least three centuries, Judaism, the Kabbalistic and Talmudic Judaism, has been ascending, particularly in Eastern Europe, in Poland, in the middle of the 18th century, about the half century before the French Revolution in 1789, we see Jewish wonder workers, Kabbalists, coming out of the Eastern European Jewish populations and coming into Western Europe. And we see the emergence of secret societies and Freemasonry and efforts to tear down the established order. In fact, if you go to the Jewish encyclopedias, such as the Jewish Encyclopedia or the Encyclopedia Judaica, which are definitive historical resources for the Jewish community, you'll find them boasting that they were, that these Jewish revolutionaries were actually behind all of the major revolutions in Europe during the 19th century, including French Revolution in 1789, and then successive revolutions in France and throughout Europe in the 19th century. But this revolutionary socialist ferment really broke out in the 1917 Bolshevik Revolution, when Jacob Schiff, who is the head of Kunin, was the head of Kunin Loeb, in banking house in New York, which is now Chase Manhattan, financed, bankrolled the Bolshevik Revolution, and with what would now be huge sums of money, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, he empowered, as you say, Jewish revolutionaries such as Trotsky, Sverdlov, Kamenev, Zinoviev, Radek, Litvinov, Lunacharsky, all of them, including Lenin, who is, I think, was a quarter Jewish. This funding empowered not only Kunin Loeb supported them, but also the European Rothschilds and the German Warburgs and so on. All of this empowered the takeover of the Russian landmass and bringing the Soviet Union into existence. That not only did the Jews play a pivotal role in bringing down the Romanov dynasty in Russia, but out of this socialist ferment in Russia, many Jewish communists came to the United States. And again, Jewish sources are very candid that these German socialists and communists became the quote-unquote peddlers of socialism throughout America in the labor unions and especially during the Depression. They came in force into the Roosevelt administration, into the New Deal, and in a tremendous move, of course, to centralize government and basically begin the welfare state, the liberal welfare state in America. And the Anti-Defamation League, however, which was created in 1913, plays a tremendously important role in breaking down Christian civilization. The ADL was a creation of B'nai B'rith International, which was a worldwide Jewish organization founded in the 1850s in New York City. But in 1913, ADL was created for the ostensible purpose of combating anti-Semitism in the New World. What it actually
Who was that again?
The ADL? ADL, the Anti-Defamation League.
Okay.
The ADL is the mainspring of every kind of, as you mentioned, bias crime legislation, hate crimes legislation, now throughout the entire world. The ADL is responsible during the 1990s for persuading 45 U.S. states to adopt some version of its hate crimes law, and ultimately, after about 11 years of trying, the ADL was victorious a year ago in persuading Congress and the President to sign the Matthew Shepard Hate Crimes Prevention Act, hate bill, federal hate bill, into federal law.
Well, you know, by the way, the technicians are telling us you're coming through real strong. They tried to turn it down a little bit. If you can back off your mic, it'd be great.
Okay.
So it's good and solid. I was enjoying it, but that'd be great. The thing that is interesting to me is a lot of people, you know, outside circles of Christianity might say, well, no, you know, revolutions are good. And I really can say, well, there are two kinds of revolutions. There's good ones and bad ones. Now, who's to say which ones are good? Which ones are bad? But I usually say that when people have to die by the millions, that generally speaking, we're not talking about a lot of good things are happening. Now, I'm not talking about defensively. I'm not talking about a nation being invaded by a nation and having to defend their soil. If there has to be millions die, there has to be millions die. I'm just talking about the fact that when you have a revolution, and in order to provoke your will, it seems like that's what they're doing, is the revolutions and everything about the revolutions that they spawn have a really dark side, an evil spirit to it. And it just seems to be manifesting, and it doesn't make any difference, does it? It doesn't seem like, you know, on one hand they're communists, and on the other hand they're the same people are Marxist, a fascist, and they really don't care what platform they use as long as they get the control, the power, and the items passed to control things that, you know, I guess they want. Now, you know, that's a lot. Taking over by killing millions of people rather than, and I'm not talking defensively, I'm talking, you know, aggressive, proactive, preemptive type of action. You know, that's a lot different, Ted, than proselytizing. I could understand these folks going out and sending missionaries and trying to talk everybody into their, you know, think the way that I do. You know, this is the way that I think. But that's not how they do it, is it?
Well, the whole purpose of the World Revolutionary Movement, which goes all the way back to Adam Weishaupt, the founder of the Bavarian Illuminati and Freemasonry and so on, is the destruction of the existing world order in order that a new world order can be erected. And in order to do that, It is a very distinctive feature of all these revolutions which come from Jewish supremacist influence that they want to tear down all elements of civilization and even intelligent leadership in society. So it's no accident that if you're a Bolshevik revolution in Russia or a communist revolution under Mao in China or a revolution in Cuba or whatever, one of the first things the communists do is they go after the landed aristocracy, they go after the doctors, the PhDs, the leaders, the teachers and educators, and they kill all those people who are basically the cream of society because they do not want the resistance of people who think for themselves. And so what you have is, like in communist China, all of the landed aristocracy, leadership and teachers and professors, all of those people are killed immediately as soon as one of these revolutions takes over. And then the proletariat, the masses, are exalted as the common denominator in society. They all wear a standard uniform like in China, male and female. Everything is very bland and drab and uniform because communism does not want people of intelligence and potential leadership rising up in distinction above the rest of the masses. So this is all part of the general program of tearing down everything that provides independence and opposition to the communist regimen. And so what we see with ADL particularly is that ADL has an incessant program of trashing Christian values and Christian civilization. To this very moment, ADL is promoting homosexuality, it's promoting abortion, it's promoting pornography, it is tearing down our Christian symbols in public, such as the crosses and Ten Commandments and the nativity scenes. It's erecting menorahs in their places, literally in the U.S. Capitol. It is doing everything it can to make Christians into homophobic hate criminals around the world. This is all part of this Talmudic, twisted Pharisaic ambition of the Pharisees to do everything they can to impede Christianity and Christian progress in the world. And whether it's on a specific and local level as the ADL comes down to demand that a nativity scene be taken out of the public schools at Christmas time, or whether it's on an international level where ADL is leading Congress and leading a presidential administration for tremendous military involvement, let's say in the Middle East, to make sure the Middle East is safe for Israel. On the large scale, on the small scale, everything is done with the idea of advancing the Judaic agenda and tearing down and stopping the Christian one.
Are we getting a fair shake? I mean, are we talking about, you know, if we can't do the manger scene, they can't do their seven candle displays or the Star of David or whatever else they might have for their holiday time. And I mean, are we getting equal footing with this? I mean, seems like if you can't do one, you shouldn't do the other, or does it seem to just focus because they've got acquired such a power base now that they don't have to worry about what they do? They just continue to push, shove, and put in the mud any kind of display of any Christian background or any kind of emblem that is Christian. And by the way, I can't remember whether it was the ADL or who, but wasn't one of these groups charged and found guilty of treason and espionage against spying on the United States? I kind of thought there was a case where that had happened and they were charged.
Well, the ADL certainly was indicted in 1989 for illegally amassing huge files, surveillance files of unsuspecting Americans, including Christian and conservative Americans. And my father and I and our organization were part of the ADL's secret surveillance. They infiltrated the West Coast police in San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Seattle. That might be what you're thinking about. Of course, there are many, many cases, hundreds of cases of espionage against the United States on the part of the State of Israel. The Jonathan Pollard case, of course, is probably the most notable. But Israel spies against America many, many more times, even than China does or the Soviet Union.
That seems kind of odd, because here we have a very small percentage of the population on the planet with a huge, huge presence in many of our government facilities. And let's talk about that. How is it that the U.S. State Department seems to have such a bias toward them? And as I understand, if you go in the State Department and you go into the offices that would include the State of Israel, they're fairly plush, and you get into maybe the Mideast for other parts of the world, and they're just kind of common everyday ordinary offices. What do you know anything about that? What is the position there at the State Department?
Actually, about 4 years ago, the U.S. Congress unanimously voted to establish an Office of Global Anti-Semitism in the U.S. State Department. And that was set up under the leadership of ADL. It's nothing more than an ADL front. And under the Office of Global Anti-Semitism, I haven't seen their office there. I don't know how plush it is, but it's a major presence in the State Department. It enjoys a status as an adjunct in the office of the federal government. And every year, the Department of Global Anti-Semitism comes out with a report on the threat of anti-Semitism globally. And they receive from ADL. You see, the Department of Global Anti-Semitism works in hand with another huge ADL organization in Europe, which is called the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. And the OSCE in Europe has 56 member nations whom it instructs to report any cases of supposed anti-Semitism or violence or bigotry against Jews during the year. And so what ADL does is it presides over this European hate crimes Gestapo, and then it takes all of the data from that is gleaned during a year over there, and it sends it over to the U.S. State Department, and then the Office of Global Anti-Semitism in the State Department then issues its report, which is basically a carbon copy of what ADL is getting through its European sources. And one of the most insidious things about the U.S. Department of Global Anti-Semitism is that repeatedly in its last several reports, it has described evangelical Christians as anti-Semitic for their belief that the Jews had Christ crucified 2,000 years ago. They are, ADL and the Department of Global Antisemitism is now calling it anti-Semitic to literally believe the testimony of the Gospels as well as repeated statements in the book of Acts that the Jewish leaders masterminded the crucifixion of Christ. And of course, this is very threatening when we have a federal office, the federal department, laying down a dictum that it is now anti-Semitic to believe the New Testament.
You know, we're on Holland Radio, and it's against the law there to be talking about constructs that are anti-Semitic, or in terms, quoting one of our host journalists that wrote a news article, got his hand slapped over there, and we have on our Gusso radio, Ted, we have a news site, and it's called Argusog.org, not ArgusogRadio.org, just Argusog.org, and it's a news source. It's been up for years, and they got their hand slapped, and I bet you it was this organization that didn't allow that information. You know, it seems like we've kind of gone, they're going way overboard, and it just seems so logical to me that there's an agenda that is nefarious and against the freedoms that were established for this country. This Constitution is struggling with these laws that they think are beyond anybody else's law, a special interest of a white Anglo-Saxon, African, any other religion, Muslim, Christianity, whatever, and that they have to be so singled out. And it seems like to me it's just an obvious agenda. What have we had lately in the United States that we've had to deal with? It seems like it just continues over and over. And I know that I went on some website, I can't remember where it was, and there was list after list, or there was name after name after name on a list of Jewish Zionist organizations, and I don't even want to say that it's necessarily even Zionist, just simply a certain philosophy these Jews have that is just almost demonic. And I saw B'nai B'rith on there. I didn't know they were actually formed that long ago. I thought they were more recent than that. But you're saying, isn't it? And I think it's interesting. The ADL was formed in 1913, and 1913 also gave us some other nefarious things in this country.
Federal Reserve Act and the income tax. Yeah, that's right. What exactly is your question right now?
Well, give us a little status now here in the States about hate crime legislation, hate bills.
Okay.
What's up and what we need to maybe paying attention to. And then we're going to move into, when we get closer to the top of the hour, Ted, we're going to start moving into freedom of speech and how things are playing out in this world. We'll move into some more recent things you got.
ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, has been working since 1998 to pass the federal hate bill, as I mentioned. Basically what happened was in 1990, the ADL persuaded Congress to pass ADL's Hate Crime Statistic Act, which would require the states to send data about alleged hate crimes to the federal government. That's a subject in its own, because the ADL has extremely lenient and permissive definitions of what a hate crime is, which it gives to the police. The ADL absolutely dominates a police education in the United States. And this, of course, is a tremendous act of hypocrisy, because ADL screams separation of church and state, forbidding Christians to be involved in politics and proselytizing in the public realm in some instances. But ADL, as a religious organization, a branch of the B'nai B'rith International, which is a religious organization, has the right, under the authority of Congress, to teach every local police precinct in America the ADL's twisted definitions of hate crimes and bias and prejudice and homophobia, all this kind of thing. as well as alerting local police, as they did last year in Missouri, warning local police to consider Christians and patriots and veterans and immigration protesters all as basically potential conspirators and domestic terrorists. So ADL liberally unites synagogue with state, whereas Christians, screams and protests when Christians attempt to bring Christian values into government. Now, as I mentioned earlier, during the 1990s, armed with this federal mandate, ADL went out to the states and persuaded 45 U.S. states, including my state of Oregon, to adopt some version of its state hate crimes law. But what they always wanted was the big federal hate law, and all during the following decade, following the 1998, when they first put that in Congress, our National Prayer Network has played a pivotal role in fighting the ADL, educating the public, doing everything we can to impact and influence Congress to hold back passage of the federal hate crimes bill. And however, as I mentioned, a year ago, President Obama signed the hate bill into law. Right now, the only reason that the federal hate crimes law is not being enforced with the kind of rigor and severity that we find in Canada or Holland or Australia or Germany, which all have ADL hate crimes laws, is because our National Prayer Network has been making a tremendous stink for the last decade. We have influenced organizations such as WorldNet Daily, who have been concentrated and focusing attention on hate crimes abuses in Canada and England and so on. And there's really, after working so hard for so long, we've gradually developed a tremendously large awareness among the Christian conservatives in America of the hate crimes hate bill threat. As a result of that, the ADL is simply, its hands are tied from going forward with indictments and the kind of persecution which we have seen in Canada, Australia, and in countries of Europe. And so what we have now in America is our hate crimes laws, which are on the books, both on the state level and on the federal level. They are, to a certain extent, in the category of sleeper laws. They're waiting for full implementation. And as long as we can maintain a concerned and active and vocal citizenry, particularly among the Tea Party people, who can take Democrats out of the Senate and take them out of the House, especially in the next few weeks in the midterm elections, then you see the Obama administration, the ADL, the forces of destruction are timid, are restrained, I should say, from going forward with the kind of persecuted agenda which these hate laws empower them to proceed with.
Go ahead.
Well, there are several other bills I could mention which are hate crimes bills, which I am very pleased to say we have defeated during the last couple of years. One of them is the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which is ADL's workplace hate crimes law. And basically that legislation makes it a federal hate crime to discriminate in any way against a homosexual because of his homosexuality in employment, makes it a hate crime to fire him because he is a homosexual, and also would require employees of businesses, 15 or less employees, allow any male or female, but particularly males who believe that they are transitioning into female in a sex change direction, would allow them into women's restrooms and even perhaps shower facilities. And yet this legislation is so extreme that the Democrats, the liberals, and the ADL were not able to actually persuade even the left-wing Democrats, especially in the Senate, as what 13 or 14 Democrats there in the Senate who really could not endorse the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, and basically it is dead in the water now. And there's another bill, the cyberbullying bill, which our National Prayer Network played the decisive role in overwhelming the House Judiciary Committee on Crime and killing that bill, plus another ADL bill, which was supportive of that in promoting homosexual education in all public schools in America from kindergarten to college. We have some real victories. We've had some real victories this last Congress, but I am hoping and praying that at the midterm elections, what we can do is we can take out three or four members of the Democrats out of the Senate and maybe 25 Democrats out of the House, and we can get back to a Republican empowerment there to filibuster and to hold back any more really dangerous ADL legislation next time around.
Well, just recently I saw that the Justice Department put out a report that seemed to kind of be very similar to this report that came out in Missouri, and I've always wondered, what is it about Missouri? It seems like I thought that state was called the Show Me State. You know, I would have thought they would have been more resistant, but it seems like for some reason Missouri has kind of been guided quite a bit by maybe ADL folks into, you know, like their reports on anti-Semitic activity and had a lot of influence in bias that seemed to be out of reason. I mean, you know, for crying out loud, a Paul supporter is considered dangerous enough to be reported to the law enforcement people if you have a Ron Paul sticker. This is insane. This is a political agenda, and it has nothing to do with religion and being Jewish. It's an insane anti-freedom, anti-American agenda, and I can't understand why is it Missouri. I mean, they had one report, they've done another report, and now on the heels of that, do you know anything about that? I mean, is there anything in Missouri that's causing that to happen? Is it lean quite a bit that way, or do
well,
you know?
Well, I think actually that was the MIAC document, which was created by the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is an adjunct, a sister organization to ADL, entirely Jewish. The SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, and the ADL submitted to the Missouri State Police about a year ago this MIAC document, in which they were advising the state police of Missouri to regard a wide variety of Christian conservative patriots as potential domestic terrorists. And this came to the attention of the right, leadership of the right. There was a loud protest sounded, and the authorities in Missouri backtracked and basically apologized. It doesn't sound to me like there's any great conspiracy in the government or the police of Missouri. It's just that ADL, SPLC were caught red-handed there in attempting to jumpstart a real profiling and persecution of Christians and conservatives. And that was followed not long after by a directive by Homeland Security, the Department of Homeland Security, headed by Janet Napolitano, in which she said very much the same thing, and that created another outrage in the Christian conservative right. And all was very, very educational and beneficial in putting down ADL. And of course, at that time, I was connecting the dots and informing a lot of people about ADL's real intentions. And so, I think what we saw in what happened there in the Missouri episode and the Homeland Security Department episodes were that the ADL people who are hand in glove with law enforcement went too far, and there was a backlash which largely educated and warned the religious right against them.
Okay, all right. Well, you know, it seems like you can't even mention the word Jew or Jewish when you start talking about a subset of the Jewish people. that have this nefarious agenda. I mean, it seems obvious that, you know, in New York City, you have one group of Jews protesting against another, and the others can be very vicious toward those protesters, you know, saying, hey, you're going to get us killed if you continue your agenda in Israel and all the other activities that you're doing. You're going to get us all killed. And then they their counterparts, which are calling themselves Jews, and if they are, fine, go over and start spitting and screaming and hollering at them and having these physical encounters on the streets of New York. So, you know, it just is almost, you can't even use that word. If you just throw the word Jew in there, no matter what else you say, if you just throw the word Jew, I mean, it would be just like, you know, profile. I mean, why can't we just say the accomplice is a white male or black male with blue eyes? Well, one of these days they're going to say, well, you can't read, you can't, if it happens to be, if the runaway bank robber happens to be Jewish, you can't say that. You know, that's, that, it's absurd. You know, either they broke the law, Either they're trying to take over America and turn the republic into a dictatorship, or they're not. So in the meantime, how have they been able to do this? What is some of their bigger tools? Tell me a little bit about that. Could we throw media in there?
Sure, you bet. Well, it's interesting that the Encyclopedia Judaica, in fact, in its article on the media, mentions that in addition to Jacob Schiff, the head of Kuhn Loeb, financing the Bolshevik Revolution, in the same year he also financed the Hollywood movie industry, providing multiple millions to Jewish immigrants from Eastern Europe to begin making the media for America. And out of that massive funding, the Judaica, in fact, in its article on movies and television, states very clearly that except for United Artists, it says all of the major movie studios were founded and controlled by Jews. And Jews supported financially by the same person who supported the Bolshevik Revolution. So what we have here is a double-pronged attempt to destroy Western Christian capitalist civilization. And so the Jewish media started with movies, then it branched off into television. Again, the Judaica has generous articles on the three founders of the big three TV networks, which would be David Sarnoff, the head of NBC, Bill Paley or Polinsky, the head of CBS, and Leonard Goldenson, head of ABC. And so what we have here, at least for 50 or 60, 70 years, was the absolute dominance, the chokehold of control of the media over the spigot of information for the American people. One of the great values of the Internet now, however, is that it leaps over these traditional Jewish media controls of information, and we are allowed now to speak very publicly, very candidly about issues which would be absolutely forbidden a generation ago. But the Jewish control of the media is absolutely without question. A number of Jews, including Neil Graebler in his definitive history of Hollywood, it's entitled How the Jews, An Empire of Their Own, How the Jews Invented Hollywood, exhaustively documents the total Jewish predominance over the media in America. And so what you have here is you have evangelicals on one hand saying that we cannot criticize God's chosen people on penalty of a divine curse coming upon us and our nation. On the other hand, we have these Jewish corruptors in the media pouring filth and pornography and sex and all kinds of immorality on the American people, especially upon the youth of America, leading us into a moral sewer. And so this is a very bad combination. What I attempt to do is, my, of course, my my quarrel with, my enemy, is not the Jewish people. I say with St. Paul, brethren, my heart's desire and prayer for Israel is that they be saved. There's nothing genetically wrong with a Jewish soul. There's nothing conspiratorial or degenerate about the heredity of being Jewish. Problem is that for 2,000 years, the Jewish people have followed the worst possible leadership of the Pharisees and their Talmud and Kabbalah and so on, which supplanted the Hebrew scriptures in authority for the Jewish people. My quarrel is with evil Jewish leadership, primarily. Evil liberal leadership epitomized by the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League. And so I go after the ADL. Every time they misbehave, I'm on them. I go after them. I trumpet their misdeeds, their conspiracies to the nations, and stand as, I hope, a faithful watchman on the wall, a watchdog, a kind of a terrier continuing to bark, letting the sleeping city know that the enemy is approaching.
Well, Ted, I appreciate this. This is an effort. I don't know where we'd be without this kind of work you're doing. And we're going to take a break, Ted. So what we're going to do is we're going to be on about a four-minute break and listen to something called What I Hear. And after the break, Ted, we're going to talk about the Tea Party. We're going to talk a little bit more about the Supreme Court and the Talmud, maybe how some of the people that are getting put into the Supreme Court are being used by this Jewish agenda, and maybe we ought to get into the fact that you're getting censored too. So let's take us a 4-minute break. We all can get us a cup of coffee, go powder our nose, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Waterman Files on our Goose Oak Radio, and we'll be right back.
This is Argus Oog Radio.
This is John Waterman, and you're listening to the Waterman Files. And today on our Goose Oog Radio, our guest is Ted Pike with the National Prayer Network, and is a very busy man trying to procure and keep and fight attacks on the freedoms, not just in America either, but the world, and with quite an extensive network of people that he's been able over the last 30 years when he started in 1980, almost exactly 30 years ago. Well, I guess it was exactly 30 years ago last month when he is, I think your brother, wasn't it, Ted, and your father launched into this effort. Yeah. And Ted continues today. You know what? Let's talk a little bit now. You know, we were just getting, you were giving us a really good rundown there of really what you might call Hollywood. Now, we were getting some questions, you know, with some concerned people listening to the broadcast thinking, well, you know, doesn't he understand that this Jewish agenda also affects Republicans? I'm sure you're aware. You know, that, you know, a lot of people begin to think that when we hear those kind of things, we need to move over to a Republican or so forth, that that's not the answer. The answer is just part, that's just part of the battle. It's one of the bullets in a gun, I'd think. And I'm, and I'd have to say, you know, it's not, that's the answer, is it? That is not the answer to the problem, just going totally Republican. And,
What we have to do in very practical terms, this last Congress has been a disaster in the sense that if you've got Democrats in control of the House and the Senate, then they can very largely write their own legislative ticket. And there are some people who say, there's not a nickel's difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. I don't agree with that. The fact is that the Republicans have basically stood against health care reform and the bailout, financial bailout. They've stood in a way that is very appreciated by me. They have stood against hate crimes legislation. The majority of Republicans will vote against hate crimes legislation. And I am not naive about the tremendous complicity of the Republicans with the Jewish agenda and AIPACs, and they are bootlickers of Israel. They do anything that they will vote in endorsement of any atrocity which Israel commits against the Palestinians or the people of Gaza or whatever. That's the other side of the Republican majority, is that they are, in a sense, they are our own worst enemies because of their unconditional support of Israel, and they do this because of their large Christian conservative evangelical base of support. But on the other hand, in general terms, I would suggest that people vote Republican in a general way in the November election, because if we can restore Republican dominance, even of the Senate, to a couple, two or three displaced Democrats with Republicans taking their place, then ADL is very largely blocked from bringing in more of its legislative sewage down the pipeline into the Congress, because there will be Republicans there like Louis Gohmert, like Steve King, like Bob Goodlatte in the House, who will stand up and will speak out. We have some wonderful Bearcat fighters there, especially in the House Judiciary Committee, who can be depended upon, especially when the people call in to the Judiciary Committee and encourage them, who have defeated the hate bill many times before and who are anxious to do it again, especially if the people will stand behind them.
Yeah, and I think we could easily say that these kind of people that are foisting this agenda, they'd ride whatever party gave them whatever they wanted. They're parasitic, the prostitutes. They'll work with anybody that'll work with them to give them what they want. And I think that's, you know, really clear. You know, when I see this this term hate crimes, and I became familiar with some of your work during these battles for these hate crime bills, which really, for me, it just seems like that's just a cryptic code name for anything that is against their agenda to take over and
Absolutely.
Get rid of freedom.
And
you know, they call it one thing, but they really have made it a cryptic name so that you can't say that it's just for them. Because this isn't a hate crime for everybody. It's a hate crime for them. Let me ask you this question. I think that just came to my mind here. It seems like they're working an agenda, and it's all very political, like you say, to take over the world. And they're very exposed. A lot of what they do can't be hidden, so they have to have a whole nother operation to counter the fact that it identifies them as moving in this nefarious way. So they have to have the ADL, and they have to have the hate crimes bills, and they have to have the anti-Semitic programming to make us think, oh, we can't use the word Jew, so that as we identify them that are taking our freedoms away, they've already made it almost impossible to talk about or use the word Jew without some kind of, oh, gosh, you know, some people just can't get past it. You know, you're talking about the chosen people, like they're going to get struck by lightning. And, you know, just going into a little bit of Christian belief systems, if they really read their Bible and understand what it says, if I recall, it says that if you do not believe in my son, you have nothing to do with me either.
That's right.
So that just means basically, they're not part of an agenda that they really speak about. And so let's talk about the Talmud, and then we're going to start working into a little bit of how this Talmud affects their thinking. How does it make them move forward, and does it affect the laws that they're trying to bang into place? Tell us a little bit about what the Talmud is.
Well, as most Christians know, Bible believers know, in about 597 B.C., Nebuchadnezzar mm-hmm. took captive the southern kingdom of Judah and Benjamin and into Babylonian captivity, and for about 70 years, until a small remnant came back under Ezra and Nehemiah. What most Christians don't realize is that that was the beginning of 1,600 years in which the Jews lived in Babylon, flourished there, actually considered it their second land of promise, and the vast majority became so prosperous and so influenced under Babylonian occultry and bad doctrine and so on, they never wanted to go back to Palestine at all. It wasn't until the beginning of the 11th century A.D., 1,600 years later, that the Babylonians finally exiled the Jews into the Western nations, and probably millions of them fled into the nations of the West. Now, in Babylon, which was the occult center of antiquity, the moral cesspool of the ancient world, there was all kinds of occultry there, demonology, astrology, necromancy, incantations, everything you can possibly imagine, including every possible kind of sexual immorality, especially bestiality. All of that, the Jews, the inhabitants of Judah were brought right into that moral sewer. And with that exile, the Jewish people no longer had their temple, they no longer had their priests, they no longer could worship in the way that had been prescribed in the law of Moses. And so a class of lay priests arose in Babylon called the Sopherim, or the scribes. And these scribes began to instruct the people concerning the Jewish law and keeping Jewish traditions and religious life alive. These scribes became what are known as the scribes and Pharisees. And in the several centuries before Christ, these Babylonian scribes and Pharisees migrated back to, some of them migrated back to Palestine and set themselves up as the religious guides to the Jewish people. After the Maccabees and during the Edomite, Herodian occupation and so on, these Pharisees flourished in Jerusalem especially. And when Jesus arrived on the scene, he said, "You Pharisees, by your oral traditions, by your laws, you've made the law of God of none effect." And one of the things that's so distinctive about the Pharisaical revolution in the old Hebrew religion was that they incorporated so many elements of Babylonian occultry, including numerology and other aspects of literally taking the letters of the Hebrew alphabet, taking the words and phrases out of the Mosaic Law and Prophets, and they would give them a numerical equivalent. They'd play all kinds of games with the actual text of the Old Testament to justify turning upside down everything that Moses ever tried to teach them about the law of God and what is clean and unclean. And so, as Jesus testified, these Pharisees, through these word games and rationalizations, were able to create what the Pharisees called an oral tradition. And the Pharisees claimed that this oral tradition was actually given while Moses was up on Sinai. The 70 elders of the tribes of Israel were actually given their own oral tradition in addition to the written law, which actually basically contradicts everything the law tried to tell them. And so, in short, this oral tradition, after the city of Jerusalem was destroyed and after the subsequent rebellion of Bar Kochba around 133 AD, the Jews were completely expelled from Palestine, but the Pharisees and the Jewish people took this oral tradition with them. They wrote it all down, and it became what is known as the Babylonian Talmud. Today, the Babylonian Talmud is the highest legal, ethical, and religious authority for all observant Jews, whether you're liberal Reform Jews, or you're middle-of-the-road conservative Jews, or you're Orthodox, or over on the far right, the ultra-Orthodox, or the Haredim, or Hasidim, whatever. The Talmud is the lifeblood of Judaism for all time. And the Old Testament law, the Old Testament prophets, that's all downriver, that's all in the past, a very, very secondary importance or authority compared to the teachings of the scribes and Pharisees. So modern Judaism is basically Pharisaism today. And it's true that in America, in suburban Judaism in America, most Jews don't even know what the Talmud teaches. But that is not true in New York City. That is not true in Israel. In fact, today, the ultra-Orthodox, these settlers, these Haredi ultra-Orthodox, which are so militant in Israel, 80% of Haredi ultra-Orthodox in Israel, 80% of their men do nothing but study the Talmud, and especially the Kabbalah, the mystical companion to the Talmud. And deep within the Talmud, basically, there are several very prominent themes. One is violent, bitter hatred of Jesus Christ. The Talmud says he's now in boiling semen in hell, in punishment for being a false prophet. Hatred of Christians, the Talmud cries out for the death of Christians, and as well as hatred for Gentiles. And I've written a couple of articles just in the last several weeks, which are posted at truthtellers.org. And the fact of the matter is that in Israel today, increasingly, these settlers and their rabbis, these ultra-Orthodox who are in the West Bank and so on, they are demanding that the Palestinians actually be killed, even the children of Palestinians be killed, believing that they will only become future terrorists. And this kind of militant, homicidal Judaism comes right out of the pages of the Talmud, where some of the greatest rabbis, such as Simeon ben Yohai, advocate. In fact, one of his most famous and most definitive statements, which is being quoted by these Orthodox rabbis, ultra-Orthodox rabbis, is "the best of the Gentiles deserves to be killed." So there's a tremendously bigoted and hateful, racistic element within Talmudic and Judaism, which makes the Jewish people, especially in Israel, cut off from the rest of the Goyim or the Gentiles, basically in competition with the Gentiles, but especially with Christianity, to override Christian values, actually to extirpate Christianity and subdue it under a new Jewish world order.
Well, it sounds like to me that it's done a good job of infiltrating what we call a free republic. And it's interesting to me, why didn't they pick China to go infiltrate? Why didn't they pick South America or some other nation? You know, it just seems like
you didn't have the magnitude of evangelical influence in China, even though there was a strong Christian element in China before the communist takeover. Only in America, only in England, only in these Western nations, but particularly America, did the Jews find the kind of fertile seedbed in which they could plant their lives and their global ambitions and find them take root and be sympathetically received.
Well, it seems like to me it's because our culture, our laws, are tolerant of their, you know, if they keep their beliefs out of the, you know, faces of others, as far as giving them a bloody nose, punching them in the eye, cutting their heads off, shooting them in the head, that they're, you know, fairly tolerant of that. And it sounds like to me that's kind of been our demise, is allowing an agenda to get in this country and get such a foothold. I mean, it just almost seems like it should have even been prophetically, given to us that, hey, this is going to happen to you.
Jesus did that. He said, beware of the leaven of the scribes and Pharisees, which is the oral tradition, the Talmud. He told us to beware of that. But he also says the time is coming when the deception, the spirit of deception, will be so great in the whole world that even, if possible, the very elect would be deceived. And what that implies is that the greatest deception of the end time will largely be a deception that is religious in nature and geared to the vulnerabilities of the very elect. And the vulnerabilities of the elect is to believe a superficial interpretation of the Old Testament promises to Abraham, where he says, I'll bless them that bless thee and curse them that curse thee, and things like that. And taking a superficial interpretation of that, evangelicals are very vulnerable for the idea that we should never speak a word of criticism against Jews for any reason. And, of course, that is patently unbiblical, because the Bible provides limitless precedents of righteous men and godly prophets and so on, including our Lord, who voraciously went after the hypocrites, especially the evil leaders of the nation.
Ted, give me and the listeners some kind of a vision or idea. Give us a picture. What would it be like if these folks were able to accomplish their goal? And not even putting it in, you know, well, Christianity would be gone. What would the freedoms of the people be like, and what would the political scene look like? Tell us a little bit about what would it look like in this world if they succeed.
Fundamental to the Talmudic and Kabbalistic ambition for world dominance is the idea that there is only one true God. And any kind of belief in a trinity or a multiplicity of gods is idolatry. Now, in the Old Testament, under Joshua and Caleb and so on, the Jews, the Hebrews, I should say, were commanded by God to extirpate idolatry from the land of Canaan. And they did that with the edge of the sword. They went in and they slaughtered the worshippers of Moloch and Chemosh and Dagon and so on. Now, there has been no new age of grace in the history of Judaism. They never had a Messiah. They never had an outpouring of the Holy Spirit. They never had a statement from their God that they accepted, demanding that they include the Gentiles in their religious experience. Instead, Judaism has continued, unabated, unchanged, with the same kind of feeling toward idolaters that existed in the Old Testament. It's true, the Greeks came, the Romans came, and so on, and forced them to curb that kind of bloodletting in order to establish righteousness in the nation. But that militancy is still there and is becoming even more prominent in Israeli politics. I reported, in fact, just recently, a prominent leader of the Shah's party, the Sephardic party in Knesset in Israel, Rabbi Obadiah Yosef, said last week, a week or so ago, that he believed that the Palestinians should be killed, even babies should be killed, because they'll only become terrorists. Well, that kind of mentality is actually increasing in Israel as these ultra-Orthodox are commanding their people to be literally obedient not only to the Talmudic law but to the Old Testament law to extirpate the foreigners and idolaters from Palestine. If the Jewish supremacists were able to establish a one-world order, there would be massive bloodletting against Christians, as there was in Russia under the Jewish Bolsheviks, where literally tens of millions of Christians were slaughtered for the reason they were Christians. And it was a capital offense in order.
So we'd have the reverse of the Crusades, basically, going on, where they would just be, because of who they are, either convert, or maybe they couldn't even convert. Maybe they wouldn't even accept Jewish if you're, you know, Anglo-Saxon, so to speak.
Yeah.
Is this going to be supported? I mean, you know, we've got this person now in the Supreme Court called Kagan. How's this? I mean, isn't she part of that agenda or not? I don't know, but it seems like it.
She certainly is. She is a product of the Orthodox religious establishment. She is undoubtedly a lesbian. But you see, under this very corrupt Judaic leadership, epitomized by Abraham Foxman, who's actually an Orthodox Jew, these Orthodox Jews have the right to promote homosexuality and even to encourage their own young people to become homosexual leaders, perhaps even homosexuals, anything necessary to win against the Goyim and against the Christians. And she's a product of this rabbinic background. I think she actually may have wanted to go in to become a rabbi. Anyway, it manifests itself as young Jews come out of the synagogue. They are encouraged to become politically active in a liberal sense, to get involved with the liberal agenda of ADL and so on, and begin to totally align themselves with homosexuality. And we can be sure Elena Kagan is going to vote pro-homosexual in any kind of case that comes before the Supreme Court.
Hello? Line dropping?
Yes.
Is the line dropping?
The line?
I can hear you.
Okay, am I okay now?
Yeah, I can't hear you now, yes.
Okay, can we continue?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, I was on the Jeff Rentz website, and there's oftentimes up there, and Hans, I think there's a line open. It's real loud. But anyway, on the Jeff Rentz site, there would be quotes from leadership of Israel, and those quotes were very demeaning about anybody that wasn't Jewish, and how they had this supreme attitude that, hey, we're not just human, we're lower than that, we're just beasts, and I think that's actually, I think that's even more extreme than the Muslims. At least the Muslims are saying, if you don't convert, I'll kill you. They're not telling us we're, you know, beast of the field that I know of. I'm not sure. But, you know, it seems like to me this is ridiculous. This is, I mean, how far is this going to go? I just absolutely can't believe it. Now, it's not very many people in media that have the opportunity to stay open to the, you know, the truth of what they're doing. And Rents has taken a very heavy hit, I think, probably a lot of flack because of it. Tell me a little bit about censorship, Ted. I think you've encountered that quite a bit on with other, you know, radio shows and hosts and so forth. I know Rents has tried to make it pretty, I guess right now I'm looking at his site, and it says here Zionist Magazine. And it's talking about the attacks on 9/11 with the WC, the World Trade Center number 7 behind it, being announced that it was going to be taken down. And on the side is Silverstein, Chertoff, and then the dancing Israelis. I'm not surprised they were dancing. You know, consider the fact, Ted, that these children over there in Israel were riding on bombs they were going to send over to the Palestinians. If you and I would take our children from a kindergarten class and say, oh, we're going to go over to the Air Force base and we're all going to write on the bombs and send messages to the bad people, we'd be those. You know what would happen to the parents? They'd be rounded up. Health and Human Services would take them away and say, you're nuts.
Yes.
Well, yeah, but not for them.
There's always this double standard. The mentality of the Western nation is that the Jews have suffered so bitterly for so long at the hands of Christians, specifically the Catholic Church and so on, that as payback time we should give them special privileges, including immunity from criticism and investigation and rights in society to control our media and even control the financial institutions of our country and of the world and so on. That's okay because the Jews have suffered so bitterly. We should basically indemnify them, compensate them for all that they have lost under the persecutions of Jewry, of Christianity, I should say, for millennia. But the truth of the matter is that in giving Israel exemption from criticism and Jews exemption from criticism, we have basically corrupted them. We have created Israel into the world's biggest spoiled rat, especially of the Middle East, but even of the whole world, where Israel feels that it has the right, anytime it wants to, it can set assassination squads in any country in the world, including Dubai and Germany and Argentina and so on, and take out its opposition. It can invade and board a peace flotilla in international waters without any regard to international law. It can invade Syria. It can invade Iran without regard for national sovereignty. These are all the manifestations of basically an arrogant, spoiled brat, tyrannical system which has been so indulged and babied by the Western powers that it is absolutely almost out of control. And the truth of the matter is that there's always this double standard. Did you know this week, for example, that ultra-Orthodox have been burning hundreds of New Testaments in southern Israel? Did you hear that on CBS News? Did you hear that
only
even
thing-
on...
No. All we heard was the Quran.
All we heard about is this awful preacher down in Florida, and I'm not endorsing him. I think he's fanatical. But all is a terrible, terrible crime to burn the Quran. Meanwhile, Israelis are burning the Quran, the New Testament. Oh, no, they've suffered so much. They have a right to do that. We won't make a fuss about that. You see, all the way along, we hear this message, this incessant message, that Jews have suffered so bitterly, and there's a special people, that they have special rights of freedom from criticism. And it's all coming back to us. But on the other hand, Israel's behavior has become so overwhelmingly belligerent and egregious that worldwide criticism now has never been higher against Israel. And I'm not in favor of any kind of hatred or bigotry that's going to persecute a Jew, especially an innocent Jew. But I do know that one of the only things we have to hold back this juggernaut of Jewish world ambition is popular criticism, popular disapproval. And it's very interesting. I did write an email, it's at Truth Tellers, a couple of weeks ago, in which the government of Israel actually endorsed and approved, encouraged a Jewish poll, an extensive Jewish poll of American citizens, and to their astonishment, they found out that following the Israeli raid on the Free Gaza flotilla, they lost about 12% support of the American people for our support, American support of the state of Israel. It went down from 63% support for Israel down to 51% in the month following the flotilla raid. And I believe this is very good news. It shows that almost half of the American people, according to this Greenberg poll, which was endorsed by Israel, untampered with a poll, it showed that 49% of the American people now are strongly critical of Israel to the extent that they believe we should no longer support the state of Israel. That's something like 134 million people now in America are wanting to withdraw from this unconditional support of Israel.
Maybe Americans are finally getting past the Hagies of the world that have convinced American people in the mainline churches that Israel can do no harm. I mean, that's ridiculous. We've got Christian pastors that, take a fork in the road and go the wrong direction. I mean, why can't a Jewish person, why can't a rabbi, why can't an entire nation run by the same group of people? Yes. But, you know, I think it's more dangerous than that. I almost feel like, you know, literally from a demonic realm, that it's actually the agenda that they're getting. But getting a little bit more down to the nuts and bolts here, when you talk about it, you can use the word ADL because, gosh, the ADL was designed to take the hit because they're the one blowing the trumpet about being anti-Semitic. So somebody's going to say ADL, 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 but don't you dare say Jewish supremacist or Jewish agenda or nefarious Jewish agenda. And the people might be waking up, but how's the media treating the message when you try and talk about it? Have you ever been told not to say Jewish supremacist?
Well, actually, I have a recent e-alert that just went out this past week. In fact, I have two of them, in which I felt led to point out that Alex Jones, the popular king of alternative talk radio, as he's described, actually did tell me on in a station break when I was on his program that he did not want me to mention the subject of the Jews, as I was attempting to alert people a year ago to the threat of the federal hate crimes bill passage. And people can go, in fact, to truthtellers.org for articles having to do with that and all these other topics we've been discussing here today. I sent out two of those articles about Jones this week, and have gotten a huge response of people reading those articles and concerned about that, because here is a man who portrays himself as being a total lover of truth, a watchman on the wall, this person who will tell you exactly the whole truth without sparing a word, regardless of the consequences. And yet, as I document, he's made it very clear that he'll criticize anybody else, but not the Jewish supremacists.
Well, that seems kind of be a double standard. Maybe it does reflect an agenda, and maybe somebody's gotten to Alex Jones. It doesn't seem like it's a fair, an open forum for truth. You know, Ted, it took me many years to get over the fact that we just have to look at the fruits of what a person does or a group does or a nation does to determine where they're coming from. You look at what they're doing, what they're proposing. You know, I'm not liking these agendas that they're putting forth, and I'm not really going to lay down and take it. And how successful do you think we're going to be? What's the likelihood of us turning this around? What do we? You've mentioned having to go in there and take some of these offices back because it's more favorable to us and more against their agenda to have Republicans in. How could we work with, say, how's the Tea Party in this? Are they fairly favorable with some of the work that you're doing, or are they just lined up with freedom, which is anti-Jewish supremacist?
Well, actually, the truth of the matter is that probably 8 months ago, we started sending out all of our e-alerts to some 850 Tea Party chapters in America. And there was the predictable howl of anti-Semitism, and maybe a couple hundred have asked to be unsubscribed. But we are sending these emails to about 675 Tea Party chapters in America right now and receiving very, very little criticism, next to no criticism now. The people, it shows that these Tea Party people, even though they are strongly inclined toward support of Israel as a group, nevertheless, they have shown themselves, the majority of them have shown themselves open-minded to the fair-minded, the documented information that we are sending them. And all I could ask would be that I'm not seeing too much evidence of the Tea Party getting on our side concerning a protest against Israel's misbehavior and so on. But I do believe that if we can continue to soak them with repeated immersions in the whole truth, that there will be people, perhaps even in the organizations, the hierarchy of this movement, which will not allow the Tea Party to as quickly become just a rubber stamp for the State of Israel and Jewish agenda. And maybe that will translate into holding back people like Sarah Palin and Joe Farah of WorldNet Daily and so on from becoming as aggressively pro-Israel in their position as they might otherwise be. In fact, speaking of Joe Farah, I wrote a couple of articles strongly criticizing him for his pro-Israel stance, and they were really quite devastating, very well received, very widely read on many, many blogs and websites. One of the great advantages we have today, which is such a luxury for me, I grew up when NBC, CBS, ABC, the big three dominated the news information business in America. It's very difficult to get any truth out. But now, through Rents.com and our own mailing list and others, we are able to get the truth out. And every time I write a particularly good article, it goes viral on the Internet. For example, my recent articles on Alex Jones, first one is this morning, had 40 different websites and blogs republishing that. The second little article I wrote yesterday already had 30 websites and blogs republishing it only after a half a day or so. And so the word goes out, is broadcast literally throughout the whole world. And there is evidence even that this message is widely received and appreciated, especially in Europe and the former satellites of the Soviet Union. I have one station told me that about 40% of their listeners worldwide come out of the Russian landmass. The effects are good. I understand. In fact, I have been told that Putin of the Soviet Union and Medvedev, they are both evangelical, relatively Bible-believing Christians, not evangelical, but believers in the Russian Orthodox faith. And that's pretty astonishing that a nation can go from the darkness the absolute darkest of darkness in the Soviet Union since 1917. And then now we have leaders of the Soviet Union who I've also been told know the score on the Jews and are providing an international break on Israeli expansionism toward Iran. And actually, as you know, the Soviets are working with Iran toward providing them with a what they believe is a clean and efficient source of energy, which means nuclear power for the coming decades. So things can change radically, and I especially believe that if we can generate true repentance and piety of turning to the God of our forefathers in this nation, in addition to all the political truth that is going out, that God can look down from heaven, can have mercy, can postpone the kind of fated judgment that Bible prophecy suggests, but also we deserve as a result of our very great national sins. He is a merciful God. He does not repay us according to our just deserts, but instead he does look down. And when, like in the Old Testament, he sees someone like Ahab, a national leader, turn his face to the wall in repentance for his sins, God is very quick to reciprocate and to come down and show mercy to us. And I believe he can give all the extension of time he needs if we will turn again to him.
Well, Ted, it's been our pleasure to have you on our program today. And I'm going to tip my hat toward our GusogRadio.org, because this topic, it comes at great risk to those people over in Europe that are hosting this program today, because they have some laws that they are dealing with that could get this kind of topic a great deal of trouble for them. And so I'm going to tip my hat toward them, too, for their bravery, because today as we began to start this program, I told them, I said, this is going to get kind of dicey, maybe, and risky. And they said, let's go for it. If it's truth, we want to hear it. And so I said, well, then let's clean the pistols and see if we can't get ourselves into a gunfight. You know, the point of it is that we have to have a forum that allows us to talk about what we think is right. If we don't have that right, then it will end up in bloodshed. And so this is the safer. If it's even perceived as wrong, it should be allowed, because the options are worse. It's just absolutely worse. So I'm tipping my hat to him. And, of course, I'm sitting over here, what bastion of freedom we have left. And if they come banging on my door, Ted, I'll give you a call, because we're going to go to war. not in a physical way, but we're at war right now with this whole thing. Ted, tell us what your website is. Tell us how we can get a hold of you and how people can get on your e-alerts.
Yes, our website is www.truthtellers.org, and we are the premier website in the world for education and alerts against hate crimes legislation. But we also speak very clearly and punctually against all kinds of threats against freedom worldwide, especially drawing attention to the threat from Jewish supremacism, whether it's ADL in America and throughout the world, or the State of Israel. And so we have literally hundreds of past articles, which are a treasure trove of information about this whole subject, dealing with Israel, not from an anti-Semitic, vulgar anti-Semitic or bitter sense, but from a truly biblical perspective. And we also have a number of videos at Truth Tellers. We have four major video documentaries, which I have made. You can watch those free of charge at Truth Tellers. We have a number of 10-minute videos on all aspects of hate crimes legislation. And I do have a book, a 345-page book, Israel, Our Duty, Our Dilemma, which is available for $24.90 postpaid. You can order that online. A very, very important reference source documenting certainly everything we've talked about here today. We also have online Bible studies we're featuring, going into the depths of Christian theology and so on. In fact, if people don't have a church, you ought to just come to Truth Tellers on Sunday morning and listen as a group to our latest Bible study lectures coming from our own staff Bible study at Truth Tellers.
Well, we appreciate that offer. How can people get a hold of you, Ted?
Well, they can call me at home. My number is 503-631-3808. That's 503-631-3808. If you'd like to order any of our videos, book, and so on, you can call me. We can take your order and get that out to you. Otherwise,
well, good. It sounds like there's a lot of information that people can get a hold of. And
if you'd like to let me know after this program how I can take this program and put it up online at Truth Tellers, we'll get that up and greatly multiply your listenership to it.
Well, that'd be great. Hans will get online with us after the show here, and we'll chat with him about that, see what we can do. Hans is the engine, and everybody else is digging coals and throwing it in the fire, and so it's quite an operation, but they get things done pretty quick, and I'm sure they can help get that done. What would you say for the listeners, if you wanted to give them a parting thought here, what would it be?
Well, I'm an optimist because I believe that with God nothing is impossible, and all power is given to us in heaven and earth if we only have the simple faith of a little child to trust and obey God. And the forces arrayed against Christian civilization are very great, and what the forces of evil want to do is to burn us out and make us disillusioned and lose heart and become fatalistic and say there's nothing we can do and we'll just have to wait for the rapture and things like that. I do not believe that message comes from God. God tells us to redeem the time and to be lights unto the world and speak the whole truth, knowing that He will back us up when we do that. And so my message is one of optimism and action. People just should come to Truth Tellers. Up on the upper left-hand page of our homepage, people can sign up for our weekly alerts. We often send out 2 and even 3 crucial alerts every week. They should be getting those directly in their mailbox, should be reading those and sending them out to their own lists. But people should just get in contact with us, study everything we have, and stay on the cutting edge of action that we can take to save our republic.
Ted, I want to thank you for your attitude. We're not talking about this is coming from a bitter root. It's concern for people and people at large, and even people that aren't Christian that benefit from a Christian republic that get blessed because of its principles that brought this nation to, and other nations in Western Europe too, to what they were and how it has blessed and how that fundamental, actual, basic freedom is so grounded in a sovereign, the land and law and freedom that was given to us through the fundamental teachings in the Bible. I'll let you go. And hang on, Ted, while we close out the show and the program, and we'll talk to see what we can get done with this other part that you mentioned. Okay, folks, you've been listening to the Waterman Files, and this is argusogradio.org, and you can email me at drjohnwaterman@argusogradio.org. It's been my pleasure to be with you today, and I want to thank you. If you have any questions and would like to contact or call, it was gracious of Ted to give us his phone number. And as always, we want to thank all the listeners for being here and being with us today, and all those that will be. And if you are not listening live, we're We're live 4 p.m. Eastern Time on our goosogradio.org. Thank you all so much, and I'll let you go. Bye-bye.
Is Argo Zoog Radio.